I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gale Rosen. This podcast has been edited for brevity, and we hope you like it.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Well, 15 months ago, Governor Phil Scott signed an executive order creating a Vermont Marijuana Commission. The panel was charged with doing detailed research on three specific issues regarding the possible expansion of Vermont's current law that allows individuals to possess and grow a small amount of marijuana. These topics include how the state could best tax and regulate the retail sale of marijuana, ways to detect the impairment of drivers under the influence of pot, and creating education and prevention programs to discourage drug use by younger people in the state. Governor Phil Scott supported the personal legalization approach, but he says he won't back a larger tax and regulate plan unless some strong driver impairment provisions are put into place.
It's not due to alcohol or not just to marijuana, but it's prescription drugs and heroin and a combination of all. And we have to come up with a way to determine impairment on our highways, regardless of what the substance is.
How has the commission decided to tackle these important questions? We'll find out today on Vermont Edition, because joining us are the two co-chairs of the commission, Tom Little and Jake Perkinson. Great to have you on the program today.
Thanks, Bob.
Tom Little, I'd like to start with you and just sort of get a basic question out of the way. The commission is going to issue its final report early next week. So I'm wondering, will that report reach a conclusion about whether or not it's a good idea to move to a tax and regulate system? Or will the report conclude that if lawmakers want to implement such a system, here are some important issues to consider? So in the first case, it would be an actual recommendation. In the second case, it might be more of a roadmap that actually is neutral on the public policy question.
Well, Bob, it's the latter. The executive order does not ask the study commission for an advice or an opinion about whether Vermont ought to legalize the retail sales of marijuana and tax and regulate it. It asks us, if the legislature were to make that decision and with the support of the governor or over a gubernatorial veto, if the legislature did that, the question to the commission was, what should it look like in Vermont? What's a Vermont model for that kind of a change in law and culture? And that's what the subcommittee reports have focused on and what the commission itself is doing.
So, Tom, there are at least 8 states, I think, that have adopted a tax and regulate approach to the legalization of marijuana. Are there some state models out there that you feel are useful to consider if lawmakers decide to go down this road?
Yeah, we think so. And we also think that Vermont is putting the horse before the cart in that sense. In all of the other states where this has been legalized, Bob, it has been by a citizens' voter initiative, which then caused those states to really scramble to figure out how to implement the law and how to set up the government infrastructure systems, regulatory and tax and otherwise. Here we are at least doing that kind of research and public testimony and reflective thinking before the law passes, so that the legislators and the governor and the public in Vermont will be well informed about the pros and cons and the risks and so forth before making decisions.
Jake, I'm wondering if it would be reasonably accurate to look at how Vermont currently regulates alcohol as a model for the retail sale of marijuana. I say that because there's a state board overseeing all the regulatory functions, licensing, packaging, strength of products. The retail stores are privately owned. Workers are not state employees, and there are a limited number of retail stores that are strictly licensed by the state. So is that the basic framework for a tax and regulate system?
I think that would be fair to assume that it's going to be quite similar to that model that we see in the alcohol industry in Vermont. I would also add that not only are the policies around alcohol broadly applicable to the regulation of cannabis, but also the health and safety issues that have been developed in prevention and education on both alcohol and tobacco, I feel, will play a large part and be extended to, or at least we would recommend those strategies be extended to the regulation of cannabis in Vermont.
And Jake, you know, I understand because selling marijuana is still a federal crime, the state only wants to be in a oversight role. But isn't the state still involved in this alcohol-based model? Does it really satisfy your concerns in this area?
Well, yeah, that's an important distinction, Bob. Currently, the state does actually have a hands-on approach to the alcohol commerce in Vermont. That would not be the case in a cannabis market. And the continuing criminalization of cannabis on the federal level causes problems for the regulation in Vermont, for the regulators, as well as for the operators. And really, it raises a broader question about how to deal with this issue. And we have to face the reality that regardless of what we come up with in Vermont, it's always going to be imperfect against the landscape of continued federal criminalization. So it's very difficult to come up with plans that are completely workable when you still have to struggle against that continued criminalization. So I think that's a very important point to consider.
Tom, the report is recommending some possible tax proposals involving the sale of marijuana. And the states that currently allow the retail sale of pot use very different methods to tax this product. Some impose a new excise tax. Some also use a state sales tax. Some are based on the weight of the products. Others also allow local option taxes to be imposed. As I'm looking at the report, it seems like you're recommending several taxes based on the sale price of marijuana, and these would include a 20% excise tax, a 6% sales tax, and the possibility of a local option tax. So why do you think this is the best approach?
The commission, and in particular the subcommittee on taxation and regulation, looked at how other states are doing this, Bob, and came to the conclusion that an excise tax plus a sales tax, and in towns where there's the added 1% sales tax, that would be about where the market is, so to speak. State of Washington's cumulative tax impact on retail sales is in the mid-30s. Colorado's in the mid-20s. The trick here is, if the state wants to do this, is if you put the tax rate too high, you advantage the underground or illegal market and disincentivize people from going to the licensed stores where they have to pay the tax. If you put the tax rate too low, you don't generate enough revenue from the excise tax to help fund the governmental infrastructure that has to be created and sustained in order to properly regulate the market and the use.
So do you think these recommendations sort of hit that middle ground?
We think so. I mean, we've heard from and the public hearings we held around the state in the last week of December, the first week of last week of November, first week of December, we heard a lot of testimony from people who are in the growing business and some producers who want to get into that, that the tax rate as proposed is too high. That may need to be worked out over time. I don't know that this is such a new endeavor in Vermont, and it is relatively new in the other states that have it, that I think Vermont was going to have to continue to monitor the tax rate and the revenue stream in order to calibrate it.
Let's go to our callers and start off today with Chip, who's calling from Stannard, and he's also a member of the legislature. Hey, Chip, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to comment on the 26%. I agree that there is a fine line as to how much revenue we need to generate from this, particularly for prevention programs and recovery programs and such. But I think that what Colorado found initially was that their tax system was a little too high. And I think we need to look more at eliminating the illegal market. And I think that if we don't have a product, while it will be safer, but if we don't have a product that's competitive in price, that we won't make inroads toward eliminating an illegal market.
Great question. We also got a number of emails, Jake, on this subject from folks who think that 26% tax is going to be uncompetitive with the illicit market. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, my initial comment would be that I don't believe that the proposed 26% tax is out of line with the taxation regimes that we see in states that have already legalized cannabis. What you see generally in the trend of states that have legalized is that they start out with a tax, the price drops, and therefore the revenue per purchase for the tax department drops, but the amount of sales continues to increase. So while you have a per purchase drop in the taxes collected, you have more purchases being made over time. And it, as Tom alluded to, it really is something that needs to be flexible, as is everything with this industry. You know, this is a developing industry. There's nothing static about it. And I think that Chip makes an important point about trying to deal with the illicit market and bring players who may already or be contemplating entering into the illicit market into the legal market. And that will require that there's a balance between the revenues collected and the amount of taxes charged for the consumer and to the producer. So it's something to be aware of, but I don't know that anybody has the absolute right answer at this point. It's something that will have to be constantly monitored. And, you know, I think in an ideal system, you would have the ability of whoever the regulator is to be responsive to the conditions in the marketplace, and that may include adjusting the tax rate rather than going back to the legislature every time that needs to happen. But that may be too much to ask.
Let's talk to Mike, who's calling from Morrisville. Hi, Mike. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
I just wanted to say with this current system, there are just too many gray areas to really make a good point for not having a taxed and regulated market. Kind of like if you look at our concentrate laws, we don't really have any, but you can kind of possess them, but you can't really create them. You know, it takes like a lot of equipment to make these things. And it's pretty dangerous stuff to do it without the proper knowledge and everything. And we don't really have any laws governing this. So it's basically all going to be black market until we figure that out as well.
So, Mike, you're feeling that the state should definitely implement a full-scale tax and regulate model?
Yeah. And until we do so, our black market is just going to flourish with the current laws we have. Like, you can have it up to an ounce on your person, and, you know, you could just say that that's what you have. You could have an ounce in your car and say that's it, and you could have mass amounts just in a duffel bag in the back seat, and there's no probable cause there. And all this money comes from this black, or, well, going into this black market is just heading right out of our state into other states that have already allowed tax and regulated markets, or, and, have giant cultivation operations going on in them.
Okay, Mike, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's talk to another Mike, this one calling from Rutland. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, yeah. Can you hear me?
We sure can. What's on your mind today?
There's a couple of things that you raised in the last couple of minutes that, had to do with why I called in. One is like when you talked about that it's illegal at the federal level but legal on the state level. One of my like main concerns about the industry would be, you know, that like the last Mike said, he said, that there's a lot of money coming in from out of state. And I think that it would be really wise for the commission to look at, that we should only sell what we produce here in the state, and that we shouldn't allow other companies or whatever to come in from another state. And that'll, like, on one hand, that'll keep us out of the federal government. And on the other hand, that'll keep a lot of the money in Vermont. And it'll also grow industry in Vermont. So, you know, we'll be, you know, dodging two things right there. And, you know, as far as, you know, we get with these big conglomerates come in and, you know, they'll bully the market and, you know, they'll drive the little guy out of business, you know. And, I mean, this is a great opportunity for, you know, money to really be spread throughout the state right now. That is really, you know, I mean, it's going to, you know, drug lords out in Mexico or whatever, you know, or it's going to the guys that are making the pot out in Colorado, you know.
Okay, Mike, I think actually the commission report does deal with this issue somewhat. Tom Little, am I right? Is there a provision in there that says at least at the outset for growers in Vermont that they should be small growers and not kind of corporate growers?
I mean, that's clearly the theme of the recommendations that will be coming from the commission. And we heard testimony around the state from people who are interested in becoming growers or are probably growing right now that they make the analogy to Vermont's craft brewing businesses and want there to have – they want to be able to – have a sort of a Vermont brand and a local feel to it and do it on a small scale. And the commission is saying that if Vermont were to legalize retail sales and commercial growing, that's the way it should look.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today in the program, we're looking at some of the recommendations of a special Vermont Marijuana Advisory Commission. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. With us today, two of the co-chairs of the commission, Tom Little and Jake Perkinson. Jake, as you look at the state's oversight in the retail sale of marijuana, is part of the argument for tax and regulate is that the potency of these products would be established and would be on the label as well?
Yeah, I think that's an important part of any regulatory scheme. You know, as the governor's executive order points out, his highest priority is health and safety and youth prevention. And so I think they should be a very high priority in any scheme that regulates and legalizes the use of marijuana or cannabis. We prefer to use cannabis rather than marijuana, which can carry some pejorative connotations. So the recommendations set forth so far in the subcommittee reports do advocate that there be limitations on the amount of THC that can be contained in a per serving size of, for instance, an edible product, if an edible is to be permitted for sale in Vermont, as well as to limit the amount of servings per container contained in an edible or an infused product. So that's important in order to give people a clear idea of what they're dealing with. There is clearly not the same level of knowledge or cultural appreciation of what the effects of using various forms of cannabis are as they are with respect to perhaps alcohol. And so education is a very important part of any scheme and regulatory environment that we might create, and that would definitely be a part of it.
Let's talk to Matt, who's calling from Benson. Hey, Matt, what's on your mind today?
Oh, I just feel like that was very important that our guest pointed out was that not only is it important to have the potency levels, but the education as well, because my point that I'm calling is because I really feel like the tax rate is really on par, especially because Vermont could really use the money. We, as Vermonters here, really feel a sense of wanting to get engaged, wanting to try out a new substance. It's fun. We're all loose. We're having, you know, good time. But at the same time, we also have to be responsible. And I also wanted to just put on the fact that I'm really appreciative that you guys have this show about this to educate people about the product. So thank you very much.
Matt, thanks for your phone call. Tom, what about the expected revenue from the retail sale of marijuana? In the very beginning, there were estimates that it could be $100 million. Then it was maybe $75 million. Now it seems, even with that 26% tax, that the revenue estimate is considerably smaller.
The commission has been working with the tax department and the Legislative Joint Fiscal Office, Bob, to come to a consensus estimate or projection of tax revenues, starting by looking at the experience of some other states with legalized retail sales, and then scaling it back for the population of Vermont. And they came up with a low, a middle, and a high range of estimated revenues from the excise and the sales taxes. And they've been working on that now going on 12-plus months, and they're sticking to those estimates. I think they're in reasonably good shape, but they're, you know, they're only estimates, and particularly in the early months or years of a program like this, the revenue could be the revenue road could be pretty bumpy as consumers decide whether they're going to purchase through the state stores, state licensed stores, or not. And that's another issue that the commission is wrestling with is if the state wants to get ready for these kinds of sales, certain parts of state government are going to need money to hire people to buy equipment and other resources before the sales revenues start to flow. And that's something that I don't think we have a clear-cut answer for yet, but and that needs further study. There's one option is to have the licensing fees quite a bit higher initially and use that money to fund what needs to be spent. And some states have suggested using an auction for the licenses. We don't think that's going to work in the Vermont context. There might be a way of us actually borrowing money by the state in anticipation of the revenues that would flow from the sales.
As you mentioned, there'll be some expense for the state setting up a regulatory process. The report also calls for millions of dollars to be spent on education and prevention. So once you take all those costs into account, there isn't going to be a whole lot left over, is there?
No, there's not going to be any windfall for the general fund of the state. I mean, listeners may be interested to know that the Agency of Agriculture, Food and Markets would get involved in terms of oversight and testing of grow operations and looking at labeling content and testing products to make sure that what would be sold in the state licensed stores is safe or at least not contaminated with anything toxic or harmful to someone's health.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Victor, who's calling from Concord. Hi, Victor. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I want to get to the point of the fact that there's no test for intoxication and therefore no one knows whether someone's intoxicated. If you do the blood test, it might not have smoked for weeks. And I think these guys on the commission are doing a good job, but I think they should take responsibility for attempting to minimize the number of people who are going to be driving and using weed. And that would mean that the law has to be changed so that the police, that the existence of paraphernalia or a spent joint, if a cop pulls somebody over and looks in the car and sees it, that is probable cause, which it might not be now, to do an additional search or to test the people. Because, the other thing is that, the alcohol laws aren't being enforced. I mean, everybody knows on Friday and Saturday on dirt roads, there's beer cans all over the place on Saturday and Sunday morning. And the roadblock law allows, I know I'm ranting here, but the roadblock law allows there to be an out. There really is no enforcement of the drunk driving laws in Vermont. And people are getting killed on a regular basis. A guy died last year right down at the bottom of the hill from my house. So, you know, this is a big problem, and serious enforcement of the driving intoxication, it might not seem like part of the job of these commissioners, but they might be able to help a lot of people and save lives if that stuff is incorporated, looking into the enforcement and what the rules are for the police, because we just don't need a bunch of people that are high driving all over the roads.
Victor, I think the commission report does address this issue in several ways and has several options out there. While we're talking about this issue, let's talk to Tony in Burlington, who has a similar comment. Tony?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just curious, to kind of piggyback off of that, you know, with regard to alcohol, you know, if you have a beer or maybe even two beers, you know, you could blow, I don't know, a .02, a .04. If you're, you know, 6'5", you know, you could, who knows, maybe you could drink a six-pack and still be under the legal limit. So my question is, if, you know, you get pulled over and they know, they can, they think that you are intoxicated, that you've been smoking marijuana, how high is too high to drive? Like, at what point would they say that you're, that it's illegal and that you're too impaired to drive? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Tony, thanks for your phone call. Jake, as we mentioned at the start of the program, this is a very important issue for Governor Phil Scott. He says he won't support a tax and regulate plan if it doesn't address this issue of driver impairment. And what you see for the states that have legalized marijuana, they have different ways of dealing this with this. I mean, some like Colorado establish what are known as per se limits. In that case, it's 5 nanograms of Delta-9 THC. Some states have adopted a zero tolerance policy. So you're guilty if you have any marijuana in your system. I think that's also being looked at in Quebec. And some states use the existing drug and drunk driving laws to detect impairment. How should Vermont deal with this?
Well, the callers are absolutely right that at this point, and this has been acknowledged by the Subcommittee on Highway Safety, there's no accepted scientific formulation for determining when somebody is absolutely impaired due to the level of THC in their blood. And in part because of that reason, we have decided to follow the recommendation of that subcommittee at the commission level and reject either a per se or a zero tolerance model, and to continue with the existing state of the law in Vermont, which would subject somebody to liability to the extent that they are in the slightest degree impaired. And that would require testing, and I think that's where a lot of the controversy comes in around this discussion. The recommendation of the subcommittee, which I expect to be adopted by the commission, is to allow for roadside saliva testing. At the commission meeting on earlier this week, there was a discussion as to whether that roadside saliva testing would be how that would be used in the evidentiary process. And I think that the commission will recommend that it would be permitted as a screening device. And then really, as we would have to do, even if the legislature decided to pass a law determining one way or the other what the level of that evidence might be weighed at, it'll have to go to the courts for a determination of what the true level of that evidentiary value is. But we do feel it's important that the police be given a tool in order to make an evaluation to go forward with their screening of an impaired driver. In addition to the saliva test, there's also provisions to, at this point, utilize the drug recognition experts that are in use in Vermont as well. And so the commission report will recommend that the number of DREs in the state of Vermont be closely monitored to make sure that they're able to deal with any potential increase in the incidences of impaired driving on Vermont's roadways.
So would that mean that if a person was driving and they were pulled over, would the saliva test basically, as you said, be a screening mechanism to determine if they had marijuana in their system, and then perhaps a blood test would be needed later to evaluate just how much?
Some other tests would be needed afterwards. That's certainly contemplated in the discussions that we've had. It could be an additional saliva test, not necessarily a blood test, but the test would be done in a different way that would be, I think, more conducive to what would be expected as an evidentiary standard in a court of law. So it may not be a blood test. It may be an additional saliva test.
But at some point, you would have to come up with some sort of limit, some sort of numerical limit that says if you're over this, then you are judged to be impaired.
I don't think that's – I don't think that is necessarily the case. You know, as I – and I'm not an expert in this area, so I hesitate to really go too much further into explaining it to folks. But I don't feel that there at this point needs to be an exact limit. The question is whether somebody is impaired and what evidence is enough to demonstrate to a court of law whether or not somebody is impaired, obviously, is up to the courts. I'm not sure that with respect to somebody charged with being under the influence of THC that there would necessarily be a limit set that would absolutely be required to reach in order to establish that liability.
Okay. Let's go back to our callers and talk to Amy, who is calling from Woodbury. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I recently moved to Vermont, and I'm from Oregon State, and I just wanted to not necessarily offer questions, but I wanted Vermonters to think about the benefits that a taxed cannabis revenue system could offer the state. And you look at Oregon State, Nevada recently, Colorado, and they've been able to help with roads and teachers, and we look at issues in Vermont where we have veterans suffering, we have an opioid epidemic, and to know that there is a demand and we could supply a product legally that would create revenue to fix the issues that the state has is something that's really amazing, and you can't deny the benefits, in my opinion.
Okay, Amy, thanks very much for your phone call. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today on the program, we're looking at the draft recommendations of the Vermont Marijuana Advisory Commission. With us today, the two co-chairs of the panel, Tom Little and Jake Perkinson. Let's talk to Derek, who is calling from South Hero. Hi, Derek. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I'm calling in support of making edibles part of the new regulated system. I believe edibles are a healthier way of consuming cannabis than smoking, and I think if you ask any doctor, they would agree with that statement. So I think we should be promoting use of cannabis in a healthy way, in which case edibles should be included. Also, they're a large part of all other regulated markets in other states, including Massachusetts, which is one of our close neighbors. Actually, I heard on NPR the other day that the first purchase the governor of Massachusetts made was a edible in the new system when he went to the store for the first time. And also, edibles have a strong connection with our Vermont specialty foods heritage. Vermont has a long history of being a leader in the specialty foods market. And so I believe we should continue that throughout the, you know, by including that in our system of tax and regulate. Thank you.
Okay, Derek. Tom Little, what about edibles? Where does the commission come down on edibles?
The commission was not able to come to an easy consensus on it, Bob. The subcommittee on health and education and prevention, headed up by Dr. Mike Levine, the Commissioner of Health, had grave concerns about edibles in part because of their concern that they would be attractive or overly attractive to children and youth. Likewise, they have concerns about advertising and labeling for the same reason. So they were recommending that if Vermont chooses to go into licensed retail sales, that edibles not be included. The other side of that coin and the other half, roughly half of the commission, felt that if you don't regulate them, the illicit market for them is therefore unregulated, and there's no state control over content, purity, labeling, and advertising. And that if we're going to have regulated sales of cannabis, that we should regulate all sales of cannabis.
Is this an issue that will be decided in the next couple of days?
I think we've come, the commission has probably come as far as it can on that one, and we're going to be more likely stating the pros and cons on the point and letting lawmakers take it from there.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Mark, who is calling from Fletcher. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. As an organic farmer, you know, the community is always looking for a product. This has been a long time coming. I remember Dean in the 90s, you know, kiboshed a hemp, industrial hemp bill. But the issue is, I think the egg is, the chicken's way before the egg here. If you want to promote a strong agricultural response to a growing industry, you don't strangle it in the crib with the taxation rates you're talking about. And all the other ancillary startup investments that need to happen to make it a good product, which is, you know, I think the boutique model is the way to go in Vermont. But I can see big, big interest getting subsidies for growing it while the small farmer gets crushed out of the market. And this is an agricultural opportunity to keep farmers, small farmers, organic farmers, on the growth, which I think is the real future of Vermont. The other issue is that it isn't regulated as an organic product, either CBD or THC is not even on thing on the radar right now. And without that, you don't get the quality premium that Vermont is associated with. So I think they really have to think how they're going to avoid the black market with the taxation. I think the taxation should be progressive as the businesses get larger and more profitable. The rate could rise. But to start out, you're really going to crush the opportunity for an agricultural boom. That's my answer. Thank you.
Okay, Mark, you know, along the same lines, we have Jim in Burke who has some questions about this. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I've got a bunch of questions. I kind of wanted to know how it would go for a small grower and some of my recommendations. One of my biggest questions is, what should we tested for? You know, I have my idea that I could, like, maybe hopefully take 5 pounds down to the local shop. He gives me a receipt that he's got it. They do whatever the state's got to do to test it. And when it's found applicable, I get paid for it. And then the state takes its cut by the poundage of how much I've grown. I would think, hopefully, that my initial licensing fee wouldn't be too much at the beginning so I could get going. An initial fee for so many plants, that wouldn't be too much, but then get taxed by how much I grow because it's an agricultural product and it goes by the season. This season I grew 3 times as much as I expected, but next year I might not grow anything in the licensing fee. One other thing is about concentrates. You have to deal with concentrates because you... How's the policeman going to tell CBD oil from THC oil? I guess that's my question.
Okay, Jim, thanks very much for your phone call. Jake, as you look at the tax and regulate structure, there are lots of different groups that get licensed. There are growers, there are processors, there are retail outlets. So to answer Jim's question about licensing, would those fees be expected to be fairly high, or is the idea to keep them low to encourage the development of these sources?
Well, I think ideally they would be kept as low as possible. However, as Tom alluded to, the state does require some initial funding, and we are contemplating recommending some higher fees in the initial stages. It would be great if we could avoid that because one of the directives of the executive order was to examine ways where small farmers could be encouraged in this industry. So that has been something that has been a high priority as we move through contemplating what a tax and regulated system looks like. With respect to Jim's concern about getting overtaxed, with respect to how much he might grow in a certain season. The tax that is being proposed by the commission does not tax growers. It's only taxed at the retail level. So while that may have some impact with respect to supply and demand overall in the market, it's not going to be a direct tax on the grower. The tax will be paid by the retail consumer at the end of the production process. Again, the other aspect is that the commission report does recommend that small-scale licenses be given at least a preference in the beginning of this – in the beginning of launching any tax and regulated scheme.
Tom, we got this email from Seth in South Burlington who wrote us, did the commission consider the costs and other impacts on the mental health and substance abuse systems of making marijuana broadly available in the marketplace?
Yes, and in fact, the I think if you asked the members of the Education and Prevention Subcommittee what they thought Vermont should make a cannabis and cannabis products more widely available through licensed retail sales, they would probably say no. The Vermont Medical Society has adopted a resolution at probably more than once opposing retail sales in Vermont, licensed retail sales in Vermont, for reasons relating to health, in particular mental health, for the vulnerable Vermonters who have serious mental health issues and young people who just may not be prepared to partake of this product, particularly with the high levels of THC that can be available. So it is a worrisome issue, and the commission's report will reflect that.
And Jake, I'm wondering what we hear in some other states that have legalized the sale, retail sale of marijuana, is they run into some cash problems or some banking problems because of federal laws. Did you take a look at that in Vermont and whether or not it's going to have to be a totally cash business?
We did take a look at that. The Tax and Regulate Subcommittee spent a large amount of time trying to struggle with that issue. And that's one of the things, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, is a consequence of the federal scheme that we're dealing with. And there's no real perfect answers, but we did look to the fact that the medical dispensaries in Vermont that are currently dispensing cannabis have been able to establish a relationship with a credit union. Now, credit unions still have federal obligations, but they have less obligations and seem to be more willing to deal with the cannabis industry. So we're hopeful that relationship can grow not only with the current credit unions, but also additional credit unions to help service the industry, because that will be a challenge and add to the cost of regulation and therefore to the end cost to consumers if we can't address that issue.
We're almost out of time, but Tom, as you look back on the work of the commission, did anything stand out as a big surprise for you that you just didn't know about when the whole process started?
Yes. Briefly, we took testimony from some folks around the state who expressed concerns with the existing medical dispensary system in Vermont for access issues and for the cost of it. And they're generally supporting retail sales because they think that will be a more affordable way and a more easier way to access what they need for their medical uses.
It's going to be fascinating to see how lawmakers and the governor deals with this issue in the upcoming session. Many thanks to our guests today, the two co-chairs of the Vermont Marijuana Commission, Jake Perkinson and Tom Little. Thanks very much for being on the program.
You're welcome.
Thank you.